Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Middle Ground on the Coffee Party USA Internet Radio Network, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. The Middle Ground looks at today's political issues from left, right, and center. We're always civil and always looking for that middle ground where real conversation begins. You're here tonight with hosts Eric Beiler and Michael Charney. We thank you for joining us and hope you enjoy the next hour of The Middle Ground.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael Charney. Welcome to another episode of The Middle Ground, this Tuesday evening or Tuesday afternoon, depending where you are. I'm going to apologize in advance this evening. As always, we work from our home studios, where the word studio is a generous term for how we call into these shows. The internet is a wonderful thing, allows us to everyone to participate from everywhere. However, we're sort of in that limbo of weather where it's not quite warm enough to turn on the air conditioning, and not quite cold enough to leave the not quite cool enough to close all the windows. And at the same time, there seems to be a helicopter in my neighborhood. So, should any of you hear the sounds of a helicopter, don't go running to check whether or not your internet connection is failing or whether or not there's something wrong with your speakers. It is Central New Hampshire simply going about its business. So I apologize for that in advance. Welcome, everyone, this evening. Tonight's a bit of a free-for-all. We've invited people to call in to talk about whatever they want to talk about. The only ground rules, of course, are civil and fact-based and reasoned discourse. The truth of the matter is for those of you who read the email that went out today, is that both Eric and I have been underwater with quite a few things. I somewhat stretched the reality of Eric's situation, talking about how he was looking to avoid being arrested, but there certainly was some scuffles down in North Carolina around not letting the press or not letting filming take place anymore, and Eric will talk about that when we bring him in just a minute. Yeah, for my own case, I've been busy writing and researching and tamping down my own anger. So I think I'm going to start tonight myself by talking about a few of the things that have been on my mind that don't seem to be getting a lot of press coverage. The one that comes to mind the most, and the one that's been bothering me quite a bit, is about a guy named Bob Filner. And I don't know if many of you know the name Bob Filner. Bob Filner is the mayor of San Diego. And as the mayor of San Diego, you know, he normally wouldn't get a lot of national attention. San Diego is a wonderful, wonderful city. I've been there many times. I love it. But admittedly, in terms of the press it gets, it's not a New York or a Los Angeles or a Chicago or even San Francisco. Nevertheless, Bob Filner has managed to make the news pretty much everywhere. If you know where to look for it, you'll find him on Reuters. You'll find him on certainly the local newspapers that have websites. And the reason Bob Filner, the mayor of San Diego, is in the news is because he is being sued for sexual harassment. And the interesting thing here is that while the suit in and of itself is something that needs to run its legal course in order to determine whether or not he has legally violated whatever the laws are in California around, or San Diego around, sexual harassment, he has actually publicly come out and said that he has a problem. And, to quote an article that I'm looking at right now off of MSN, it said that Filner apologized, and I'm quoting, apologized earlier this month for disrespecting and sometimes intimidating women in an extraordinary video released immediately after the initial allegation surfaced. And you can find that video on the web if you're interested in looking at it. So Filner has actually said, quoting him, "I need help." And he has said that he would be unable to lead San Diego if his behavior didn't change. That's as far as he went, though. He hasn't agreed to resign. There are, not surprisingly, quite a few calls for his resignation. most of those coming from Republicans. And why this story interests me is that those who were, for example, calling for the head of Mark Sanford, don't seem to be calling for the head of Bob Filner, with the exception that I have seen of Barbara Boxer in California, who has really kind of come down on him pretty hard. Nancy Pelosi basically did the, I don't know him sort of thing, going out on a limb and saying that they were not actually colleagues, even though they were in the legislature together for quite a while. I just don't seem to see a whole lot of any of the usual bastions of liberalism, either on the web or the Huffington Post, for example, or Think Progress or Mediate. I don't see a lot of screaming and yelling about how Filner needs to go. And it sort of struck me yet again how we live in this strange world of stories that we build for ourselves, and we either ignore or justify those things or overlook those things that we would normally loathe if we ran across them in somebody who doesn't agree with us. But because somebody like a Filner is, you know, doing the good work in San Diego, nobody's going to come out and support the guy, but they'll certainly look the other way while he continues to keep his office as this goes forward. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that he's guilty of anything that the law would say he was guilty of, but he's come out and said he's unable to lead his city and that he needs help. I think a guy who's accountable for his own actions would step down, and I think that the people who would expect somebody to step down for that, if they happen to be of the opposition party, should expect the same of people in their own party, if not even hold them to a higher standard. And of course, we can shift mayoralities from the West Coast to the East Coast, where Anthony Weiner is leading currently in his primary race, and yet continues to fight continued information, shall we say, about his apparently unending proclivities for sexually oriented mischief, I should say. More sexting. Apparently he's said that there will be more pictures coming out if they haven't come out already, and we should expect them. His wife has come up to the podium and stood by her man. I'm not seeing, for example, this outcry here on the East Coast of how Anthony Weiner should, you know, just leave the primary, should step away because he's, you know, morally not fit to be the mayor of New York. Of course, in New York as well, we have Elliot Spitzer, who is ahead in his primary race for comptroller of New York. Elliot Spitzer making a comeback, and I guess I'm kind of wondering where the outrage is. And this is a story that I've talked about before. It's an issue that I've talked about before, which is the one that gets my goat the most, is how we selectively choose what we will believe or what we will forgive based on whether or not the person who is doing it generally agrees with our ideologies. And so I blogged about that a little bit today, in general, the idea of narratives and stories. So I want to invite anyone to call in about anything, but those are certainly the ones that were top of mind for me today. You're listening to Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric Beiler, who I'm going to bring in just a second. But let me give out the phone number, because it is a call-in show tonight, pure free-for-all. Our number here is area code 646-929-2495. That's 929-2495. And if you're interested in speaking with us on the Middle Ground, just press 1. We'll know you're in queue. One of us will try to get to you in our little private chat room to find out what you want to talk about and what your name is. We'll try to do that. If we don't have a chance to do that, we'll just call on you by area code. But let's first bring in co-host Eric. Eric Beiler, welcome to the show. I seem to be having a little bit of control board difficulty. Let me try it. Eric, are you there with us now?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, I'm... Yes, we can hear you now. That was a misclick on my part. I apologize. So you actually didn't you weren't facing arrest. I apparently stretched that story a bit, but you did There were some issues about not being able to film, I understand, there down in North Carolina.
Yeah, I think you stretched it a little bit. I was sort of surprised that you wanted to stretch it a little bit, since you are such a stickler for being as accurate and,
Well, I'm sure you're certainly trying to avoid being arrested. You wouldn't want to do anything to arrest you, to get arrested, right?
Okay.
So
right. Well,
it's technically true. It's a fact, but it's out of context, and so it doesn't have a lot of truth to it, like many of our stories. Go ahead.
Well, longtime listeners to Coffee Party Radio probably remember that I was arrested during the Occupy movement when I was documenting a police crackdown on Occupy LA. They swept up 292 people, including me. I had never set foot in the camp and never protested at this camp or any Occupy camp. I'd only visited those camps as a journalist, but despite my protest, I was arrested on that day, and I still have a court, basically I still have to go back to L.A. to figure out if I'm going to go to court for a civil rights or freedom of speech issue, or they're going to drop the charge. Anyway, in this case, over 12 weeks of Moral Monday protests, Annabelle and I have developed a pretty good relationship. I would say a great relationship with law enforcement in the two jurisdictions that overlap between Capitol Police and General Assembly Police. We know the police chiefs. We know their seconds in command. We know many of the officers. And so I wasn't really that worried, but there was something different yesterday than had ever happened before, and that is that the announcement usually goes, this has been declared an unlawful assembly. You have 5 minutes to leave the premises or you will be arrested. And about 5 minutes later, Annabelle usually gets a tap, and it's the second-in-command guy, and he's saying, okay, now you have to get on the side of a certain line, and so do all the other journalists. Except, of course, the Charlotte Observer guy, Tim Funk, who was arrested because he didn't manage to get across the line in time. But this time, what they said in addition to that was that, actually, they didn't say in love with him, but they said the building is closed. The building is now closed. It's 6 p.m. Everyone in the building will be arrested if you do not leave the premises. And he said, basically, it included all of the people who were on the second level looking down, which was different, and that's where I was filming from. And also, he said, if you have a Capitol press pass, you can stay, or if you've got a press pass for today, you can stay. And we had never gotten a press pass for Moral Mondays. We do it to film on the Senate floor or the House floor, but we've never done it for Moral Mondays, and so I did not have a press pass on me for that day. So I continued filming while the rest of the place cleared out. Journalists left, citizen observers left, and I just, when it got to be just me and MSNBC up on the second level, I started to wonder if I was in danger of getting arrested. So I just went over to the lieutenant who is second in command, usually the one who taps Annabelle on the shoulder on the second floor, which is where the arrests take place. I was on the third floor looking down. I said, hey, am I in danger of being arrested? And he said, well, do you have your press pass? And I said, no, I didn't get one today. I was only filming, Moral Monday. I didn't think I needed one. And he said, well, and he looked at me. And I said, oh, shit. And then he said, no, you're okay. So,
and we apologize. We don't have a seven-second delay button on this show.
Oops, sorry. I said, oh, darn. Anyway, it was a very interesting day. It's coming to a transition for Moral Monday because the legislature session will end probably this Friday. If Republicans and Republicans can agree, it will end this Friday. And what's really getting interesting is that the issue that essentially drew us here in the first place is now finally coming to the forefront, and that is voting restrictions. North Carolina today passed through the Senate the most severe voting restrictions in the United States. And it passed through Senate committee. It could be voted on the Senate floor tomorrow. I'll be filming while Annabelle's on the local NPR politics show. tomorrow. She's on it in the noon hour on a show called The State of Things, if you're in North Carolina. Listen to your local NPR affiliate for Annabelle. And most likely, it'll overlap with the Senate vote, so I'll be at the Senate filming. But basically, the bill, in addition to voter ID requirements, which other states have, although in those states they allow student IDs and in some cases even cable bills and other ways of proving identification, this has none of that. And then in addition to it, we have measures to discourage college students from voting at all, with or without IDs, because their parents will be penalized on their tax return if they fail to return home, no matter how many hours away it is from where they live on campus, to their parents' jurisdiction or their parents' precincts to vote. If they register where they live, college students will see their families penalized $2,300 tax deduction, which you get for claiming a dependent in the state tax return, $2,300. Also on including these bills, what else? Oh gosh, now I can't remember what some of the other ones are.
So we'll try to find. Do you know if the bill is it available online yet to see?
Yeah, there's tons of stories about it. It just happened today. And we're
ready. We'll try to get a link to that, to the bill, for those who are curious, and put it out on the Facebook page.
Cool.
Yeah, it does sound highly restrictive. Are there so what is the feel for the protest around that? I mean, is Moral Monday going to start to cover that issue as well?
Or is it a separate? They've been talking about voting rights from the beginning, because these bills are these. They were bills. They were floating around for a long time. But it's sort of like, you know, we heard a few weeks ago with the Sharia law / abortion / motorcycle safety bills, is that these things float around and people don't pay much attention to them, because sometimes there are crazy things that are introduced, but they never make it to the floor of the Senate for a vote. So I think there's special kind of public concern right now, because it's making it to the Senate floor. Now I remember. This is the other huge thing. Okay. North Carolina used to be a very low voter participation state. You know, in the shadow of Jim Crow, there were all kinds of laws to discourage not just black voters, but poor whites from voting. They were always in the bottom 10 of voter participation until in the last 10 or 12 years, they started doing things like early voting. They even had same-day registration and then vote during early voting. They have Sunday voting, I should say, had Sunday voting, and a lot of people went to church and then voted together as a religious community. And so that's the big controversial thing, because Republicans and Democrats alike really appreciate having the opportunity to vote across, I think it was 14 days of early voting.
Mm-hmm.
And because they don't like to spend very much on voting machines, it made it possible for people who live in populated areas to vote in under 5 hours, which is really convenient. But for whatever reason, they're following the footsteps of Florida, which for the 2012 election thought it might be nice to go with the 5-hour waits in certain parts of the state. Obviously, the parts of the state that are populated would be the ones that are affected the most populated. So they did that in Florida. There were lines at the door around the building, down the block, and it really sort of backfired on the lawmakers who were thinking, I guess, that they would get some electoral advantage. And so they rescinded those laws that had cut down on early voting and reinstated early voting. They even brought an election official from Florida up here. We filmed it a few months ago. We didn't realize it was going to be as important as it is now, so we didn't post it then, but we'll post it now. But anyway, he basically told them the whole story. But they're going to do it anyway, and so it may not be until 2016 that this is undone, because I don't know how much public outcry there will be at this point, and I don't know how much turnout there'll be in 2014 without a governor or president on the ticket. They will have a Senate race. Kay Hagan will be running for re-election, but it may not be till 2016 that they have this debacle where essentially the election is decided by how many people are willing to wait 5 or 6 hours to vote and how many people are not.
Yeah, interesting. We, you know, it was fortunate that so many people in Florida were willing to make those kind of waits, but that kind of disenfranchisement in order to retain power is just it's just evil. I mean, it's not. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about what democracy means, and that just isn't it. I mean, the abuse of power in order to retain power has just extensive ramifications. So we have a couple of people in queue to chat with us, Eric. So, you know, we can talk about the mayor of San Diego. We can talk about voting rights. We can talk about, you know, last week we talked about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. We can talk about the constitutionality of anything that you want to talk about. We can talk about foreign policy or drones or Egypt. Whatever's on your mind tonight, area code 646-929-2495 to speak on the middle ground. We're going to go first to area code 724. I've been waiting for a little bit. Thanks, area code 724. What's your name? Where you're calling from? Area code 724. I guess we have.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Were you on mute?
Yeah, sorry. I had my own mute on. Sorry. It's Greg from Pittsburgh. How are you?
Oh, hi, Greg. Greg Rusak from Pittsburgh. How are you, Greg?
I'm doing well.
Nice to hear from
well.
You.
Yeah.
Welcome to the middle ground one more time.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Thank you. Thank you. Well, my head's spinning now with all those possibilities you just ticked off. I was curious to hear from Eric about the Thankful Tuesdays.
Thankful
okay.
Tuesdays, which
they,
I guess
I think that's
is
what they're called.
Right, the Pope led the Art Pope led response to Moral Mondays, and there's a clip of it out on YouTube you can look at. I think.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, so I was curious to get Eric's reaction to that. Oh, and you were
Eric.
Too.
Tell us, tell everybody, I think, a little bit about what it is and how it came forward, and what the reaction's been.
Okay, so Moral Monday is, I think we can all agree, a progressive movement that's led by the North Carolina NAACP and has since grown into a coalition that includes women's reproductive rights groups, that includes LGBT communities, the immigrant communities have come out. It's basically, it looks like a Barack Obama coalition, you know, the rainbow of colors that America is becoming. And after 11 of these rallies, and the folks who Michael mentioned Art Pope. So Art Pope has a he's kind of like the Koch brothers, but he focuses only on his own state. I think the Koch brothers are actually from North Carolina. They definitely have a lot of business interests here. In any case, Art Pope is not as wealthy, but he has enough money to have pretty much. He has a ton of influence in North Carolina, and the legislature that they have is largely due to his financial contributions, as well as the districting, the redistricting that was done after the 2010 census. But in any case, his group, Civitas, which is kind of like the Americans for Prosperity or the Freedom Works or that sort of thing, you know, it's a think tank. They did some things to try to counter Moral Monday. For instance, they put photographs, the mugshots of everyone who was arrested on their website, and many people felt it was an intimidation tactic to try to make people less inclined to be arrested or to make people sorry that they were arrested as part of the Moral Monday protests. But they also actually on this website, they did some really interesting and useful statistical analysis in it, and it actually helped to show how diverse the coalition was, because, you know, it showed the ethnic breakdown. It showed there are people from all political parties, including Republicans, who were being arrested. And it showed there are a lot of wealthy people who were being arrested, and indeed a lot of people who weren't themselves in jeopardy of, you know, losing their homes because unemployment insurance was being cut off or that sort of thing. It was a lot of people who were coming out for other people, not for themselves personally, but I guess for their beliefs. that you know, we the people should try to help other people. Anyway, Civitas actually did not endorse this Thankful Tuesday. The leader of Civitas, Frank DeLuca, this the artful funded organization, one of them, basically denounced the idea. He said, the turnout is going to be small. We're going to look stupid. You guys should just call it off. I'm not participating. And he said this publicly. But I guess you could say that it was the Art Pope Coalition that showed up at the rally. And you know, all of the legislatures that he helped to elect, the legislators that he helped to elect, were there. There were probably 30 members of the General Assembly, Republican members of the General Assembly, who took the stage. And if you see in the video that shows this part, they couldn't all fit on the stage. So many of them stood in front. And I included in my cut of, you know, that part of the rally, every single person and their introduction. Annabelle thought it was so boring and didn't think she should be in there, but I thought it was interesting that, I mean, 30 people in the General Assembly, or nearly, were actually there. The other things that I found interesting, and I did write a blog about this, the two people who ran for the Republican Party chairmanship were both there. The one who won, Claude Pope, which is Art Pope's cousin, he spoke early in the rally, and he's now the chair of the Republican Party North Carolina. And then Glenn Bradley, who Annabelle and I first interviewed way back in January when we first started covering North Carolina, he's the more Ron Paul type of Republican, the Libertarian. He ran. He told me that he would have won if Karl Rove hadn't showed up and started throwing his weight around in the race. But Glenn Bradley also was given the microphone, and interestingly, when he was introduced, they said, we checked with the Republican Party, and it was okay for Glenn Bradley to speak. So here's the mic, Glenn Bradley. You know, his speech wasn't all that different, actually, from what others were saying. He just opened the scope of issues up a bit. But he later emailed me that he was praising things in his speech, some things that he didn't even actually like, but just to kind of go along with the rest of the Republican establishment. Maybe he learned his lesson about being too much of a maverick. I'm not sure. But I can't wait to interview him again and find out what things that he praised that he doesn't actually like. But in general, they celebrated restrictions on abortion and tax cuts. That's the two biggest things they were happy about. But they did mention voter ID, and it was a big hoot and holler for that. And when they talked about Trayvon Martin, it was very interesting. They had an African-American. We're going to do a big video about him, African-American conservative. His name is, we interviewed him for 3 hours, and now I can't remember his name. But anyway, he caught up with him a few days later, and we interviewed him. But during his speech, the one line, I'll just give you a taste, he said, so I hear a lot of people saying that they respect the Trayvon or the George Zimmerman acquittal verdict, the jury has spoken. He said, well, you know what? If you respect the verdict, shut your pie hole. And everybody just, like, really, you know, cheered really loudly. And then he went on to say, and I'm sick and tired of people accusing you of being racist. If someone ever calls you a racist, don't say I'm not a racist. No, he said, I want you to stop saying I'm not racist, because you're playing right into their really unfair game. You're not racist, you're patriots, is basically his thing. So he got a lot of warm response from the crowd, which you know, many people pointed out on the Facebook page, was very much of the same demographics as the Tea Party.
So it's interesting. One of the things that I found curious is the clear difference between Moral Mondays, which has much more of a grassroots feel to it, and this some apparently more orchestrated. I've watched videos of both, and it seemed far more orchestrated and far less real, as opposed to even, say, you know, I've seen videos of Tea Party rallies, in North Carolina. So I don't think this is a partisan kind of thing. I think it has to do with the level of commitment and the level of passion around grassroots ideas. And North Carolina is one of those places that's got a little bit, from the videos that I've seen, you know better than I, Eric, there seems to be a little bit of a split personality. You do see some sort of grassroots Tea Party events down there that seem far less artificial, far less astroturf than in some other places that I've seen. Whereas this, the video that you filmed of this Thankful Tuesday, it had an astroturf feel to me, very much so.
Hmm. Well, you know, I should have said this was the most interesting thing. It's almost as if the roles are reversed in North Carolina compared to the America as a whole, where the Tea Party emerged during a time when the left was exhausted from pushing so hard, first during the primary, Clinton versus Obama, and then, of course, during the general election, Obama versus McCain. And they were not only exhausted, they were sort of complacent. They were like, well, now we have Barack Obama's president, we can relax, we can go back to our lives, and everything will be just okay, right? And so then, meanwhile, the people who watch Fox News and listen to Rush Limbaugh and that sort of thing, they're hearing Armageddon every day. It's Armageddon. It's the end of the world. We have to do something. You know, he's not even born in the United States. Oh, really? It's crazy. Everybody made it this early and we're organized. So that's sort of the opposite of what's happening here, is that, you know, Pat McCrory has been elected governor, Republican. They have a veto-proof majority in both the House and the Senate for Republicans. And so I think that the people on the right, the grassroots on the right, I'm sure they exist, but right now they're like, well, what more do we have to do? You know, we're done. We're going to go about our lives.
Interesting.
It's either that, or it may be that because a lot of this legislation is not really from North Carolina, but it's from ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council, it may be that the right-wing grassroots is quietly unhappy with these laws because it's unfamiliar to them. It's not anything they asked for. It's not anything that anyone campaigned upon. It's sort of coming out of left field. I should say right field.
it's not from the grassroots perspective of the Tea Party. It's not the core issues of smaller government and lower taxes. Those are not the things they're focusing on.
Isn't
that
actually bigger government?
I'm sorry, Greg?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was actually making the point that it seems to me that what the Republicans are doing in North Carolina and in other places is actually infringing, if you will, or imposing themselves even more so into our lives than you would think their doctrine would allow or call for.
Well, certainly than the libertarian wing of their doctrine would allow or call for. You're right. I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. There's a real hypocritical disconnect in lower regulation and smaller government, except where I need it to enforce what I want you to believe because you don't believe it and you're
like
wrong.
In the privacy of your own home or in your own bedroom or with between a woman and her doctor or and her loved ones making decisions about. He's like healthcare.
There's no question that there's an invasiveness and by definition, in order to police these kinds of laws, you're going to have a larger government that's going to do it. No question. Let's go ahead and move on to a couple more callers. Thanks for calling in, Greg. Always good to talk to you.
Same here.
And in a moment, we're going to go to Neil from Florida, but just before we do that, we're going to take a very quick break and ask you to help us out.
Hello, everyone. This is John Cashin, host of the Coffee Party Radio Civics Minute. Did you know that the Coffee Party is funded by our listeners and fans, and not by the super PACs, think tanks, or by a super wealthy individual wanting to buy the American way? The Coffee Party USA is powered by the people and your passion to bring positive change to our country, but we need your help to continue. With just a small donation, you can help us continue bringing Americans together for a dialogue that attempts to bypass the normal partisan rhetoric that is so common today. The Coffee Party USA is striving to bring you original content from editorials, fact-checking, and video documentaries, while also working to bring you the latest information from all of the 535 congressional districts. No matter what party we may belong or what issues that we follow, one thing is always clear. We are all Americans. Please go to coffeepartyusa.nationbuilder.com/donate and donate what you can to help us move our country forward, united with one voice, E Pluribus Unum. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin.
Welcome back to the Middle Ground. You're listening to Michael Turney and Eric Beiler on this wonderful Tuesday evening or afternoon, depending on where you are. Again, it's a free-for-all call-in show tonight, area code 646-929-2495. Just let us know what's on your mind. If you're interested in joining the show, just press 1, and we'll know that you want to talk to us, and we'll bring you on. And now we're going to go to Neil, who's been waiting patiently in Florida. Good evening, Neil. It's been a while since we've heard from you. Glad to have you calling back in. How are things there down in Florida?
That's good. Good evening. How are you guys?
We're doing well, thank you. It's interesting. Your state has taken some beatings lately. We've had, I believe, John Oliver on The Daily Show had some not-so-nice things to say about what was going on in Florida recently.
Well, we have the new case.
I'm sorry?
We have the next Trayvon. Well, it's not really Trayvon, but the next case about it's going to happen in September of the guy who shot into the car and killed the youth in front of a 7-Eleven. That's the next one that's going to be in Florida.
And this will be specifically around Stand Your Ground?
He's using the Stand Your Ground law, but there's a lot of witnesses. His girlfriend was in a 7-Eleven. The kids were playing the music too loud. He walked up to them, and he shot into the car with four people, killing one. He said there was a gun. The police found no gun. He just basically didn't like the kids. They talked back, and he killed them. He killed a kid. And he was white, and the kid was black, and that's going to be the latest thing in September.
Interesting. Everybody seems to be weighing in on Stand Your Ground laws. I know that's not the particular reason you were interested in calling in, so I don't want to hijack
no,
your
no,
time.
No. It's fine. I just want to tell you. The reason I'm really just always upset about the obstructionism, we had the Farm Bill. The Republicans are always talking about financial responsibility, fiscal responsibility. The Farm Bill was outrageous. They gave millions and millions, maybe even $1 billion to corporate farms, millions of dollars to themselves. And meanwhile, Paul Ryan, 5 minutes before the vote, tried to take 1.8 million children off SNAP. 70% of all funds go in SNAP to children. And I really have trouble with the Republicans calling themselves pro-life when they don't care about once the child is born. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's ridiculous. They've obstructed every single jobs bill since the president has gotten in, every infrastructure bill. They rail against the takers, but they don't believe in a living wage, and they also filibuster every jobs bill. Boehner was talking about how it's not his job. It's the worst productive Congress probably in the history, and he's thinking, his mentality is that it's what we repeal, not what we do, and the whole mentality is just, it's backwards. This country needs jobs. It needs, the Republicans rail against about getting government out of our lives. Meanwhile, they're in every woman's womb. They think that a rape kit will stop a woman from getting pregnant. It's just all this bizarre stuff, but nothing is getting done. And then there's going to be the battle over the debt ceiling and everything else in the fall. And I'm just disgusted. I don't see anything happening for this country. It seems like they just want to create this third world country where there's just endless despair.
Well, I certainly share some of your frustrations, particularly as a Republican, but I also will always push back on painting an entire group of people with one brush. It is more obvious now, and in a good way, it's more obvious that there is an internal war going on inside the Republican Party for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. Let's be clear. The Republicans are not going to become Democrats. Right? Republicans have, and myself included, have some very fundamentally different beliefs. And so within the Republican Party, we look at, you know, one of the things I wrote in the email that I sent out for the show today is, isn't it interesting how suddenly John McCain seems like the rational guy? There are people within primarily the Senate, but even a little bit starting to show up in the House, who are beginning to break with the extremist mantra and beginning to look for ways to work together. That doesn't mean that they're looking for ways to agree or become Democrats. And I think it's a perfectly legitimate thing. I mean, let's separate rhetoric for a minute. When John Boehner comes out and says, you know, we're going to be measured by what we repeal, that's a great soundbite. And it's a great, and we know it's a great soundbite because you and I are repeating it along with many other people. But philosophically, here's a man who believes ideologically that that the Obama administration and the Democratic Senate before and the House before overreached, that they went too far, that they introduced things into our society that he feels are too far to the left, and he wants to repeal some of those things. Now, we can argue about whether or not what he really means is straight out repeal, and let's forget the 38 Obamacare votes. That's all, you know, that's a waste of breath. But whether or not he's putting on repealing things or whether he's putting on changing things, but if he truly ideologically believes that we've gone too far to the left, and he does, to say that he wants to undo some of that stuff, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. He's telling us what he believes. The things around the jobs bill, and I think we also, Neil, need to separate the way some of the states are behaving from the way the federal government is behaving, Washington is behaving. I want to be careful when we say things like Republicans believe that a rape kit will, you know, stop a pregnancy. Well, Republicans don't believe that. A very small and vocal one particular legislator in Texas came out and said it. It was stupid. And there are plenty of, I'm sure there, I know there are others who probably believe things equally ridiculous. To say that Republicans believe that, I don't believe that the vast majority of Republicans believe that at all.
The thing I don't understand is that they talk about getting government out of our lives and they're obsessed with abortion, but they're the same people. And yes, I am dealing with a big brush. A lot of them are against birth control. They keep on railing against abortion, but at the same time, they don't really seem to care very much at the state and the federal level about children in poverty or children without health care. You only hear about the preborn.
So let me ask you a question. Why are those two conflated in your mind?
What do you mean?
Why does it have to be – this is always interesting to me because I hear this all the time. Why does it have to be that if you care about the unborn and you don't have exactly the same care for every other stage of a human being's life, that makes caring for the unborn wrong?
It's
why do we conflate all of that?
Wrong.
Why can't we talk about it as a separate issue?
It's not a separate issue. It's basically it's pro-life, and if you don't care about children after they're born, and you're basically taking food out of children's mouth, I'm not going to view you as a Christian whatsoever. I mean,
we're getting into a couple of different things. Pro-life to me is a marketing term because people don't want to be anti something. Okay, I think pro-life is a silly term. Okay. Pro-choice is better to me. Is a better term. It's more meaningful. Pro-life is it's pro-unborn. I can go with pro-unborn or pro-prenatal or pro-pregnancy or whatever. But pro-life is so. Let's move that away. Okay.
Okay.
Well, you can use the term all you want, but what it really means is people who want to restrict the ability of women to make choices about abortion, okay? Because they believe that abortion is fundamentally wrong. Some people, by the way, believe that theologically, but there are people who don't, okay? So, and I'm one of them, by the way. I'm not interested in taking away choice, so don't get me wrong here. But I do fundamentally believe that aborting an unborn child is wrong. Okay.
Okay, so the way you were doing
but that doesn't but that doesn't mean I want to impose it on you. So there are people who believe it on both sides.
But there are people on but mostly on the Republican side who don't even believe in birth control. If you have better science, you have less abortion. And you have people in your party high up in the leaders who are keep on trying. They really have a problem with sex. It's more than just abortion. They think that a woman should have consequences. For you know they're against birth control. They're against any form of rights that women have. It anything sexual, there should be consequence. That if you're that a man would have, you know, they'll spend anything on Viagra or anything else on any type of thing. But if a woman is on birth control, they flip out, and it's like
you won't get an argument from me that there is a sizable wing of the Republican Party who believe that sex is wrong outside of marriage, that that the purpose of marriage is procreation, that we shouldn't do anything that could in any way make it sound like sex is okay outside of marriage. There's no question about that. But I also want to point out, I think this is really important, that this is really the first time, and this is happening at the state level, and this is why the war inside the GOP, to me, is a good thing. At the state level, for the first time, we're actually seeing real legislative action on these issues in a way that's harmful to a lot of people. Historically, at the national level, the party has made a lot of noise about issues like abortion, the big social issues. But once elected, once they hit the emotional buttons and get those people to vote, at the national level, you don't see anything happen. You really don't see anything happen. I mean, you see struggles over minor amounts of money for things like Planned Parenthood. And I'm not saying that's trivial, but in the grand scheme of things, you haven't seen a Republican president make overturning Roe versus Wade their number one agenda item.
But
you don't see federal legislators making that their number one agenda item.
The thing about you is and me though is that you're rational. You're a Republican, and I'll disagree with you, and we'll talk it out. But we'll be respectful and rational. I think you and I, or people like us, could probably solve all the problems than these legislatures in both sides who are just screaming and yelling and acting like children.
Because, I appear to play well with others, but I really don't.
Oh, okay.
I get pretty stubborn. But thank you for thinking that.
You just seem like a rational guy. I mean, you seem like I'm talking to you, you disagree with me, but you're not like screaming at me and calling me names. Like some of these other, you know, I've talked to some, and I don't like calling people names either. I don't want to dehumanize anyone because we're all Americans. It's just, you know, I believe in good jobs. I believe that we should be proud of as a country and all work together and get things done and compromise in every relationship. It's just the big word is compromise. And everyone is just—it's just like there's no real us. It's us against them, and that's the real problem. We have all these things with Monsanto and everything else that's going on that really is scary. And that's on both sides of the aisle. They're pushing that, so it's just scary. You know.
Well, see, now you've hit something really interesting, right? And this idea that there are things where it's powerful elected interests.
Mm-hmm.
Who are working at cross purposes with you and I, with whether we're Republicans or Democrats, and here I think is where there's a real opportunity for people to have conversations about ways to change things. I do believe, and this is I think this is truly transpartisan in this sense. I do believe that the influence of money in politics and the need to continue feeding that beast in order to keep power is the fundamental problem that we have in this society. It's not our arguments about abortion. It's not even our arguments about race. And these are not trivial conversations. I don't mean to say that they are. But
mm-hmm.
but they are not the ones that I think are the ones that can really bind us together. And I honestly believe this is, I guess, that little touch of paranoia. You spend a couple of years in politics, I think everybody's going to end up with a touch of paranoia. But as the old saying goes, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you. The the idea that there are people there who are interested in having us all fight, that having us argue about abortion is distracts us from the fact that we're not allowed to know what's in our food. Okay? And I'm not saying I care whether or not I eat GMOs. In fact, I'm kind of one of those people that doesn't care. I really don't care. But I certainly want to know. I want the right to know. I want to know what kinds of corporate welfare. I want all of that information. I want to know what chemicals are being used to frack so I can decide whether I think it's good or bad without getting caught between two different films of propaganda. That, to me, is a place where people can really start to bind, is to come together and say, how do we get back our right to know what's going on in our country so that we can at least make informed decisions, not decisions that are distracted, not decisions that are based on disinformation, not decisions that are filtered through pundits, and by the way, that includes me half the time, but really, you know, force the knowledge. And when I see things like, you know, the bill in North Carolina that made it illegal to measure the height of water at the seacoast, because that might possibly lead to the idea that the water is rising and might somehow support climate change. And the fact that a very large real estate lobby in North Carolina was one of the principals who pushed that law through. So it's no longer legal to measure the height of the ocean on the North Carolina coast. Those kinds of things, the idea that that without anybody even noticing, our Congress redefined zero. They redefined a mathematical construct so that we can pick up a label, we can pick up a food, we can look at the label and say that, and it can say that trans fats are zero, and there actually are trans fats in there because they've legally redefined what zero means. Those are the kinds of things where I think it would be very easy for lots and lots of people on both sides to sit down and really create movements around and let the government know who really is supposed to be in charge here.
Well, that's basically just being as Americans, not as a party, as like you said, separation. That's just basically us as Americans. We should know what's going into our water, what's going into our food, everything. We should this should not even be debatable as Americans. I mean, it's not the United States of corporations, it's the United States of America. The Koch brothers or anyone else doesn't own this country. We do.
That's absolutely right. And finding a way to remind them that they work for us.
And they don't think that. That's the problem.
No, they don't. They don't. And I see that as really the key to a lot of, you know, what an organization like the Coffee Party is really about. In addition to, if we have those kinds of conversations and we have them with civility and respect, realizing that people have different stories and that they're not always going to agree on the best way to do it, I think you'll still will find a vast majority of interested people who would say, well, yeah, I would like to know. I mean, like I just said, I'm not going to sit there and debate with you about whether GMOs are good or bad, because we'll never convince each other.
No.
But if we have those deeply held beliefs. But the sitting and talking about whether or not we want to know whether we're eating them or not, even if we don't care, that I should certainly be okay with you knowing and making your own decision. Those kinds of things, I think, are a place where organizations like the Coffee Party can really, you know, make a difference if we sort of coalesce in those areas. And it comes down to money in politics. It comes down to campaign finances. It comes down to freeing these, you know, poor fools who've been elected and suddenly find themselves in a position where they have to spend tons of time raising money. And of course, you know, they're gonna listen to the people who give them bucks. That's the way it works. So anyway, so Neil, thanks for the call. I got another call waiting, a couple more in queue. But always good to talk to you. Thanks for calling. Don't be a stranger. It's been a while. Always like
thank
to
you,
hear
sir. Call I appreciate
in.
It. All right.
Take care. Next up, we're going to area code 518. 518. Welcome to the Middle Ground. What's your name? Who are you calling from? No. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Michael, Joe Pomponio up in Albany, New York.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. Good. Interesting open mic tonight. The city election thing for the mayor and Mr. Weiner down in New York.
So I got to ask you, Joe, before you go on, can you maybe get a little bit closer to the to your phone there? It's a little hard to hear you.
How's that?
That's a little bit better. Great.
Okay. They're covering it on the news in New York.
They're covering the Anthony Weiner?
Yeah, Anthony Weiner. The local elections on national news never really make much noise. The cable stations are covering it. They've been covering it for about 3 days. And, I've got to admit, trying to find the appropriate word, the gentleman involved in this, and this is not a political thing for me, they should just drop out. Anthony Weiner indicated he might do that. The guy in San Diego is going to be forced to.
We'll see about that. I'm not convinced. It'll be interesting to see where the hue and cry comes from to do either of those things, particularly when, in the case of both Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer, right now Weiner's poll numbers may change, but as of right now, they're leading their primaries. You know, they've got name recognition, and these are guys with clearly very large egos who want back into power positions.
Well, it's good for their egos. There's a woman running down there, Miss Quinn. I don't know her first name. If I were going to go with anybody, she's got an 8-year track record of working with government, of getting things done. She's got eight years of balanced budgets. If you want a mayor, that's who I would go to.
I have to say it's endearing and somewhat cute to hear you talk about the idea that somebody who should be elected on the basis of being qualified. I find that novel and you know, somewhat atavistic. I'm not sure that we've seen that kind of approach in at least a century now.
New York City readopted their campaign contribution laws, and honest people can actually get in there and have a chance to run and win. Now, I'll go a little on the other side with Elliot Spitzer. All right, he had his problems, seems to have cleared them up. But as a controller handling money, I'd want him there. I'm in Albany, so I can't vote in any of that. I'd like to move into just touch on the GMO thing.
Before we get off this subject, the question I have for you is, in any of these situations, There is the question of whether or not they're qualified to do the job, and being mayor of New York City is an interesting one because I doubt that anyone's really qualified until they get there. It's one of the few biggest jobs in the country, and it's very visible, and it's not like any other mayoralty. But the question I always have is, how effective can somebody be, even if they're qualified, if they've got all of this stuff hanging over their head? I mean, what chance do they have to make a real impact on a city? And I agree with you, Elliot Spitzer, probably is qualified to be comptroller, but who needs it? It's like, is there nobody else qualified that the Democrats can put forward? That why would they want to select this guy with all of this, or why would the party even want to back them with all of this baggage hanging over their heads? That's my question.
Well, as far as Elliot Spitzer, he was the sheriff of Wall Street, okay? His ideas, his plans for how he wants to handle the pension funds of that city compared to anybody else, all right? He is financing his own campaign. Right? He's not taking outside money, and he's got a track record in it. As for Ms. Quinn, she's been there for 8 years. I'm not sure. She's the head of one part or another of the city government. She has been there. She's met with people. She's gotten things done. She's not coming in from the outside. She's not returning from Congress. She's not... somebody with a lot of money and influence just trying to get elected. She's actually done the job. It'd be a step up. Sure, there are problems with running a city. It's almost like running a state down there. But she can handle it. She's demonstrated it for 8 years. She did several interviews. I read some background on her. And if I were in New York, that's who I'd be going with.
Interesting. I'll be very curious to see if the polls shift at all after some of the latest revelations. So can you hold on, Joe? I know you want to talk about GMOs. Yeah. I need to take a quick break, and I'll be right back with you.
All right.
Just stick with us. Thanks. So you're listening to The Middle Ground on the Coffee Party USA Internet Radio Network. I want to tell you about a new series that's going to be starting up on as little snippets within the Coffee Party USA radio shows. This one, as well as, of course, Lunch with Loudon, Politics Done Right, and Press One for Democracy, which is our suite of shows. And it's something that's been put together by one of our board members named John Cashon, who you heard on the promo piece asking very kindly for a few of your dollars earlier this evening. John has always been very interested in the educational side of what the Coffee Party can do, and in particular, he himself is a historian and very, 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 very learned around, in particular, American history, American political history, and American civics. And he's put together a series of pieces that he calls the Civics Minutes. And we're going to be kicking those off shortly, but I just want to give John a moment virtually to introduce the Civics Minutes.
Hello everyone, this is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. With today's internet culture, everyone is inundated with political news promoting a given ideological stance, one way or the other. Stories, videos, and pictures are posted on social media sites, and news websites and blogs have a very large audience tuning into them for the latest political moves coming from D.C. and in the country. Of course, there is a huge audience that watches the 24/7 news networks to keep up with the politics as well. It is obvious they promote their own political positions. But which one is right or wrong? This is where understanding American civics can help in resolving for yourself the correct answer. There are many the federal and state governments to confuse the public to what is happening. Sometimes that is exactly why it's done, to keep their actions under the public radar. My hope is to point you in the right direction for being your own civics detective so that you can know the truth of what's going on in our government. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA blog talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
So I invite everyone starting next week to give a listen during our shows. We will be playing John Cash on Civics Minutes. I know he's done something on the Boston Tea Party. He's also done something on the Constitution, and he's going to be digging into some more pieces as we go forward. So that's something to look forward to, the Civics Minutes from John Cash on. And we will stretch our bounds and serve to educate wherever we can. And by the way, if you hear, particularly me, but many of us, if you hear me say something and you hear John disagree with it in one of his Civics Minutes, you can trust John. He's certainly very good at his facts research. So we can look forward to that next week. Let's go back to Joe. We're now entering, to steal a line from Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, from Car Talk. We are now into the third half of our show. And Joe's been patiently waiting as I put him on hold. Joe, welcome back to the show. You wanted to talk about GMOs. It's your show. What would you like to talk about?
Okay, well, just touch on the labeling end. I tend to agree with you insofar as if they're going to genetically modify things and, at the moment, I'm not going to say it's sketchy, but it doesn't seem to be that harmful right now. Just let me know it's there. Now, when you examine that, where I have a problem, and this is both political parties, if you will, the companies doing this are given immunity from prosecution. So if at a later date, maybe prosecution is a wrong word, they don't have any liability. So if 10, 15, or 20 years from now, as has happened in New York with General Electric and some pollution they did, there's a problem. There's no recourse. Now, touching on fracking, that's something very dear to me right now. And,
well, let's go back to let me just quickly respond to your point. Two quick thoughts. One is that I think that, and this is not my point. I heard this from somebody else, but I think it's actually a good one. Is we have to be a little careful about defining, getting proper legal definition around what GMO is. As somebody pointed out, you can very naturally modify organisms genetically, right? You can crossbreed, you can raise crops, and those things can be for good or bad as well. You can actually breed all of the variability out of crops in the attempt to make them as productive as possible, and then you get what's sort of a monoculture kind of situation, and one new pest can knock it all out. So there's genetic modifications on a couple of different levels. There's also genetic modifications for things like growth or speed of how fast something will germinate or grow or things like that. As opposed to, for example, the kinds of modifications that are meant to make something, pesticide resistant, as opposed to, pest resistant. There are lots of different things here, and I think just saying we need to label GMO, I think we need even more than that. I think we need to understand when we talk about GMO, what kind we're talking about.
Okay. I generally, what has been asked for, at least the petitions I've signed, is whatever way it's been modified, all right, all they're asking for is on the label to say it's GMO. And the companies, Monsanto, all right, won't do it. But now, it still brings me back, and I'm throwing fracking in here for a reason.
No, that's fine. It's your show. We want to switch to fracking. That's fine.
It's in the same area. They have immunity, okay? If at some point in the future something does happen, they're off the hook. You can't sue them. You have no recourse. And this was put through while everybody was debating health care and gun laws, and it slipped through. The same thing with a few...
It's another perfect example of the power having shifted away from people. And by the way, I want to go on record here again. I actually believe that that we do need certain kinds of tort reform. I do believe that... a lot of the issues that we have around the costs in society, particularly the healthcare costs, are related. They're not entirely related, but they do have a relationship with the legal costs associated with a lot of lawsuits. But the idea that recourse is not available at all is clearly something that, the people with the money figured out how to get passed into legislation. I wonder, Joe, and I'd be curious about your thoughts on this. How do we get people to care? Right? So I think a big, what you've just said, this idea that if I'm living in Pennsylvania or one of the places where there's a lot of fracking going on, and someone gets sick of it, if we get a Love Canal situation or an Aaron Brockovich situation, the kinds of things like that, how do we even make people aware of the fact, how do we get them to care about the fact that they have no recourse or that these kinds of laws are being passed?
Well,
that's been the one that stumps me, is getting people to care.
All right. What we are trying to do here is quite what the Coffee Party does, is to get the word out, to make it part of conversation, contact letters to the editor, phone calls to the local news media, asking them, hey, I saw this happening in Congress, you're not mentioning it, and we have a situation like that here, right? And get them to help us get the word out. Another way, which I've just started doing, I'm a little slow to the front lines myself, but we can attend town hall meetings. Now, my only problem is the town hall meetings open to me. My representatives basically are already on my side. I'm basically joining their side. It's the opposing parties that I can't approach because I'm not in their district.
But let me ask you this. Do you think they're on your side to the point where they're not taking any big money?
Because if they're taking big money,
I don't buy that they're on your side.
When I brought that to their attention, now, on a state level, I'm not too concerned, all right? They're doing a corruption thing here. We tried to get their election.
There's not a lot of money flowing at that level, you're right.
Yeah. Now, on the federal level, I brought this straight up at Paul Tonko's town hall about money in politics. Matter of fact, several people did. And his feeling is, if you can get it stopped, I'm all for it. He signed co-sponsored a bill. He signed on to a bill to try and limit it. But as long as the system is the way it is, he has to take the money. Now, in fairness, he's taking the money. I don't know how much influence. I don't see that much from my end. But, yeah, I'm sure that somebody's getting something out of it. And his feelings, he's open about it. He doesn't try to hide it. It's a question of can we get everybody on board? And this involves crossing lines with Tea Party-type people, with conservative-type people, and make them understand it is our government. Now, the part I run into the biggest problem on is it seems as though everybody wants something for free. They don't want to have to pay for an election. And I've got to be honest with you. I'm with you there. I can't overcome that. I just, try to make them understand that it's a system that belongs to us. And if they have to come to us for the money, they have to be fair. They can, disagree all they want, right? But they're disagreeing with us, and we're the ones that get to work it out. They're not doing things for someone because they supported their campaign, and because they have the money, they don't really have to listen to us or give us lip service at a town meeting.
I always wonder whether or not, if somebody took the money and got elected and then used their time in office to do nothing but deal with this issue, would they be able to develop enough of a following and a name once they're in to not need it anymore? It would be interesting, but it's a fundamentally broken system, and it's not likely to be fixed from the inside because it's just a recursive loop. You have to have the money to be able to be in a position to argue against not having the money, but then you're already in the system and you need the money. So I know Janine. On Lunch with Loudon has talked about this a lot, and that's sort of where we came up with and give her the credit for coming up with the phrase, this idea of a major push needs to be to free the elected, that they're trapped in a system that probably many of them wish they weren't in either.
I've seen more than one in interviews on, believe it or not, even C-SPAN, but your cable networks. I haven't seen anything on local news, but locally, I don't think it's that big an issue. That have said that, people that, there was a gentleman, I forgot the state he was from, and he ran again after 20 years. He was in office 20 years ago, and he said it was like a work week. You went in 5 days a week, you did your work, and then you have weekends off. He goes, now you're there two and a half days, and you're gone, and you're back on the phone trying to raise money.
Right.
And he didn't like it. But, if we can get enough of people there like that, we might be able to do something. But as you said when we started this a few minutes ago, how do we get the public to open their eyes and look at it that way?
That is the big question. To me, that is the big question, getting people to care. Joe, as always, thanks for the call. We're going to start winding the show down now, but I appreciate your calling in and talking with us tonight. It's some interesting conversation. Hopefully you'll give us a call back next week. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, it's interesting. I bring Eric back in for a bit here. I don't know, Eric, if you've ever been approached to run for office. I've toyed with the idea a couple of times. The first time was back in when I lived in New Jersey. I was thinking about running for town council in Vernon, New Jersey, which is where I lived. And at the time, this was about the time when there were big issues about people running for office who maybe had somebody, a gardener or a nanny that they had paid under the table, and it was the whole thing about not paying the proper taxes and all this, and there were all kinds of ridiculous scandals. And yes, I understand the legality of all of that, but I still have a guy who mows my lawn and I write him a check or pay him cash. So at the time, it was like I didn't want to go near it because I had somebody doing my lawn, and I didn't want to deal with that issue. A number of years later, after I'd moved to New Hampshire, I thought about it again and came to the conclusion, one of the things I hate the most is like sort of picking up the phone and talking to strangers. It's easy on the radio. First of all, most of the people who call in now aren't strangers. They've been calling for so often, but it's much easier in this kind of environment, but I spent a little bit of time in sales and I didn't do well at it. The reason I didn't do well at it is because I couldn't do any cold calling. I didn't like the idea of just talking to strangers. And when I realized that while running for office and serving my community would be a wonderful thing to do, I just got these incredible butterflies at the thought that I would have to make phone calls to raise money, and I knew I could never do it. I just knew that I would not have the capacity to do that. And so, as far as I'm ever going to go is where I am now, which is I'm a volunteer on the Town Parks and Recreation Committee, which doesn't require an election. So I'm just wondering, Eric, whether or not you've ever toyed with the idea of running for office and whether or not you think you could do it, raise all that money.
No. Although in
no, you've never thought about it, or no, you couldn't raise the money.
I think about it and immediately say I don't want to do a number of things that you have to do because I've been very close. I'm watching very closely as politicians maneuver, and I see them voting for things that they don't believe in because it's the most expedient, lesser of two evils path to stopping the government that they're a part of from damaging the county or the state or the country as much as it might still have it damaged, but a little less. The kinds of sort of compromises you have to make to your integrity is a big reason. But, I was thinking as you led up to that question, when I was making narrative films that would be released on the film festival circuit and then released in theaters and I was winning awards, and basically I was a hot shot, for about 6 years from the end of my
career. Yeah, you got introduced by Roger Ebert at one panel.
You were
a hot shot.
Film festival. There's something somewhat addictive. I mean, obviously not addictive enough for me to stay with it, and otherwise you guys would never know me in this sphere, but there's something addictive about being the only person who can do X, right? So if you're the writer-director of the film and there's a decision to be made about wardrobe or lighting or whatever, ultimately it comes up to you, right? And also, if you're the writer-director of the film and you're promoting it afterwards and, someone has to go on TV or whatever, and it has to be you. And I think, for a politician, there must be something intoxicating, right? Even the most, the part that you think is the most repugnant, making a phone call to raise money, perhaps a part of them is the fact that, the one person who could make that call and get that millionaire to fork over the cash is the senator himself. you know, or is the candidate himself. So I think that in order to run for office, you have to kind of like being the man or the woman, as the case may be. You have to enjoy that a little bit. And I know there are people who do. It's probably not the best way to select the people. I'm not saying the way we select them, but sort of the natural selection for who runs for office. But
right.
Especially because media is such a huge part of how elections are decided. In some ways, it is a sort of a natural selection that takes place, and we have to choose from the best of the people who pass that litmus test of
right.
really liking the limelight. And
one of several litmus tests, right? They need to also obviously pass the muster of the powerful committees and national organizations who will be giving them money. Right?
Well, over time, I think as social media has more influence and corporate media has less, I think that the money that is so necessary to buy corporate media will have less influence, and we might have better choices. There might be candidates like you and Joe were talking about who could successfully even run on a money in politics issue platform and win as an outsider candidate, you know, as a challenger. But yeah, in the meantime, I mean, they're going to have to be sort of this amalgam of movie star and, you know, reality TV star, you know, and pundit and politician.
You know, that's not a bad idea. Maybe we should turn it into a reality show and get these issues on something that's maybe the equivalent of The Bachelorette or American Idol, and then we might finally get people interested in some of these issues.
Well, yeah, this is the thing, and I've been saying this for a while, that the people that cable news selects as the characters for their show, because, you know, there's 435 members of the House of Representatives, 100 senators, but there's certain ones you see over and over again.
Yes.
And how do they select them? Exactly the same way that the producers of reality TV shows decide who makes it on the show. The people who are the most outrageous, who will say the most offensive things, you know, and the people who love to be in conflict with other people and are always going to cause trouble, that's who stars in the reality TV show we call American Politics.
That's right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. If we could just somehow make it so that we can get a bunch of them to live in a house together and let people vote on them, then we would get people interested. But you're right. It is unfortunately as much a game show as anything else these days. And I know you struggle with the same question we all struggle with, was how do we get people interested in having conversations about important issues? And I tend to fall back on trying to avoid getting roped into those kind of the no-win conversations, the ones that are that are fundamentally and most obviously emotional triggers, and to try to find the kinds of conversations where we can agree that we need to bring back knowledge and power and influence to all of us, rather than,
hey, Michael,
than where it seems to live today. Yes.
I wanted to tell you one more thing about the changes to election laws that was voted out of committee today in the Senate. It was originally just voter ID, and then they added they had a 14-page bill that became a 50-page bill overnight. And it was interesting, during the hearing, the Democrats were caging through it, trying to read it as fast as they can so they could figure out what to complain about in the limited time they had during the hearing. And some of the things that came up, you'd be surprised, or maybe not so surprised, while they're restricting the influence that people have on elections, they're actually increasing the influence that money has on elections. So they're basically rolling back campaign finance laws, restrictions on when spending, you know, how close the election to spending can be, disclosure laws that require you to say in the commercial who paid for it, not just a fuzzy name, but actually who their top donors are. That was something that was actually on the books for a little while, and they're taking that off. So it's an interesting, Senator Rucho, Bob Rucho, was one of the senators who piloted this through, and Senator Apodaca is another one who we've interviewed, and we're sort of friends with them. And, you know, there is a way that they can explain it so it doesn't sound as bad as it sounds. But I haven't been able to get them to articulate it in the way that anyone would buy it. I'm going to try the next time we interview them. It has something to do with, well, if you allow everyone to do early voting all throughout the 100 counties, and you don't heavily regulate it so that you have to do it for these hours and not those hours and all that sort of thing, then some counties will have more access to the polls than others. It has something to do with that. But oddly enough, at the same time, they decided in this bill to say Sunday voting is optional. If you want to have it in your county, you can, and if you don't want it, you don't have to have it. And by law, every electoral board in every county is 2 Republicans and 1 Democrat, regardless of who lives in that county. So, I mean, it very well could end up that the counties that have a lot of African Americans, just for instance, would decide to do away with Sunday voting, while the counties that don't have very many African Americans would allow Sunday voting, so that the religious community isn't disenfranchised as a whole, just a certain portion of the religious community, the African American religious community.
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that there's a few things above all else that drive me insane, that just, you know, that raise levels of anger in me, and I don't get really angry about politics a lot. You know, the two big ones, as you know, I've said over and over again, are anybody trying to feed me a marketing line, particularly if it's one that's been all over the place and they're spouting it as if it's intelligent mantra. The second one is anybody who believes that I will be better off, I can decide I will be better off if I don't know something. And the third one is disenfranchisement, is the attempt to consolidate power away from the people who should have it. And I'm, you know, I'm not a fundamental believer in a pure democracy. I ascribe to that that old cliche, you know, pure democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for lunch. I believe in the minority. I believe in things like the filibuster, and I believe in the need for some of those controls that give the minority some power, regardless of who's in the minority. I believe in the Republican form. I believe in the Electoral College. But I do not fundamentally believe in taking away the root of all of that, which is a person going to the poll. And that's one of the things that just drives me crazy. So when I'd be very interested to see further videos that you have from Story of America. So we're just about out of time. Did you have anything real quick to add, Eric? I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, this is usually the time of the show where we go to Bobby Rodrigo.
Right. Usually when for those of you who don't know, Bobby Rodrigo is a frequent caller. Did not call in tonight, by the way, which if you're listening, Bobby, either live or on replay, we missed you. Often Bobby ends up being our last caller, and I give him 30 seconds real quick. So we are just about out of time. I want to thank you all for listening again. Next week on The Middle Ground, we don't know what we're going to do yet, but Eric and I are going to put our heads together. But thanks for joining our free-for-all tonight. And as always, just to reiterate what you heard earlier in the show, I know nobody has any spare money, but if you have a couple of dollars that you could spare for the coffee party, maybe instead of a cup of coffee or that next musical download, we would very much appreciate it. That's how we survive on small donations. So head on over to www.coffeepartyusa.com and hit the donate button. That would be great. Thank you all, and good night.
That's our time for tonight. Thanks for joining us, and please share your comments and suggestions with us at conservatives.coffeepartyusa.com, where you can follow The Middle Ground and participate in the 99% media. Our theme was written and performed by The Consultants and produced by Van Gabriel. Please join us again next week on The Middle Ground. Until then, be wise, be strong, and be heard.